To the phone lines we go. Happy to have our next guest on the program, as we do every week here. Host of Sportsnet's NHL coverage, also the 31 Thoughts podcast. Jeff Merrick now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Merrick? How you doing, bud?
What is going on today? And until you stop doing it, I'll always say the same thing. That music is much too cool for me.
No, it's good. It's good. It's got that It's got that nice morning mellow vibe.
I know. It's a really cool vibe. And then in comes Merrick with his high nasally voice to wreck it.
What we're going to start with, Jeff, is yes, we were like, what are we gonna, we got to talk about Bruins Islanders. How are we going to do this? So we thought we'll throw Jeff our poll question. It's a real simple one, but it's actually got a fair bit of debate going. Right. Is Barry Trotz the best head coach right now in the NHL?
I think that always kind of changes, doesn't it? Like right now, he's looking like a master. Like he's a really, first of all, there's a couple of things that he's done really well. One, sticking with the lineup that that's got him there. A couple of tweaks and changes along the way. But, I mean, he has the luxury of having a lot of veteran players.
Yes.
And a little bit of infusion of younger kids with, you know, your Beauvilliers and your Dobsons and, of course, Matthew Barzal. So he does have that luxury. The one thing, I'll tell you, there was one moment in this series where it was a masterclass in how to manage things that are out of your control by Barry Trotz. You know what I'm talking about?
I believe
so
you're
Sunday.
I kind of know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
You know where I'm going with this one?
Yeah.
So Sunday, Barry Trotz, in the most clever way, and here's a guy, like you look at his background, old Regina Pat defenseman, you know, a little fire hydrant, tough hockey player. Here's this guy who's giving a masterclass to the rest of the coaching fraternity on how to handle officials. This is where he's talking about Patrice Bergeron cheating at the faceoff circle, cheating at the dot. I mean, it's a common refrain. We've heard, you know, these accusations about every elite level player going back, I don't know how many years.
Sid was a big cheater.
Sid, well, you know what? You know what it was with Sid too? I mean, it was always cheat with your feet, right?
Yeah.
Tie up. That was always the thing with Sid, right?
Yeah.
Oh, cheat with the feet, cheat with the feet. And so Trotz, like a normal coach would just come out and blast the officials. How are these guys missing it? It's unreal. It's terrible. I can't believe that these brain dead zombies can't see how Bergeron's cheating. Like that's a normal, you would expect a coach to say things like that. But Trotz comes out and in a really nifty bit of stick handling says something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing here, talks about Patrice Bergeron taking liberties at the draw, cheating at the draw, says it's obvious to everybody, and then compliments the officials in a very specific way, which is actually a backhanded compliment by saying, but we have some really good and intelligent officials out there. I'm sure they'll catch it.
Nice.
I'm sorry, man. Like, that's a Picasso. Like, that really is.
And more importantly, it didn't cost him $25,000.
It did cost him. The poor Bruce Cassidy has got to go down into his jeans for 25 large. Yeah. Meanwhile, essentially, Barry Trotz has done the exact same thing, and he's still got all of his money in his jeans. It was, listen, Trotz is outstanding. We all know the situation with the Washington Capitals, and even Trotz knew that he was dead man walking in that Stanley Cup year, and he was gone. But listen, he's got he very much seems to be the right coach for that team, doesn't he? Like when you look around the NHL, there are just some coaches that seem like they fit. Trotz fits. I mean, he fit with the Nashville Predators. He fits very much with the New York Islanders, much along the same lines as how someone like John Cooper fits with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that's why this next upcoming series between these two teams, I think, is going to be so fascinating, because I don't know if Tampa's going to be able to make that extra pass anymore against a team like the Islanders. You know, Tampa's always guilty of making the extra pass because they can. They're Tampa. They fire that thing around. How many times have you said, okay, there's the shooting position. No, he's passed the puck.
And there's the seam pass, and it's an open net. There you go. Easy goal for Tampa Bay.
I don't know that that's going to be available against the Islanders. I don't know, maybe we can get to that next series in a second, but long-winded way of saying, you know, right now he's sure, Barry Trotz sure does look like the smartest coach in the NHL. Absolutely.
He must be a very good motivator in addition to being a good tactical coach, because people always talk about Trotz's system and how it may not be fun to play or may not always be fun to look at or to watch, but it's effective. You need to get buy-in in order for your players to play that way. And I think about the way that Daryl Sutter coaches, or John Tortorella, or you know Craig Berube with the Blues. Like that's not an easy way to play, and but Barry Trotz seems to always get the buy-in. And I wonder with the Islanders if he used the departure of John Tavares or the kind of us against the world mentality in order to get those guys to buy in, because they seem exhausting to play against. And I think the Bruins were completely out of gas at the end of that series.
Yeah, especially the blue line was completely out of gas. And listen, poor Tuukka Rask could barely move. Like that's going to be one of the questions I think that we're going to really want to hear answered here from Bruce Cassidy. Why did you stick with Tuukka Rask? I mean, you saw the game last night. He couldn't move.
Yeah,
it was really tough to watch. The buy-in question is a good one. I think a lot of that comes down to personnel, whether you have the guys. And let's not forget, too, like they're doing this without Anders Lee.
Yeah.
Like without one of their key players here. But I mean, you have guys like Brock Nelson, Jean-Gabriel Pageau. You bring in someone like Kyle Palmieri. That fourth line's been, you know, well spoken of for a number of years here. You're always interested in players who are in their sort of late 20s in that leadership role that will allow younger players like Bevilier and Barzal to sort of come in and figure out how you're going to play. And I think once you get buy-in from your Lees and your Nelsons and, you know, relative newcomers like Pageau, we should throw Josh Bailey into that mix too. He's been around for a lot of years. I think it gets a little bit easier. To me, that comes down to, you know, is the coach getting the right players from management that's going to allow him to do all the things that he wants? And I want to make one more mention here about the Islanders. Make no mistake about it, this is Lou Lamoriello's New York Islanders. A lot of the finishing touches have all been put on here by Lou Lamoriello. There have been some wonderful deals. This year's trade deadline, last year with Pageau.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of Gar Snow fingerprints all over this thing.
True.
There's still, and maybe, you know, that the one deal that A, haunts Edmonton more than the Hall deal, and B, has been a bonanza for the Islanders, is Gar Snow's Griffin Reinhardt deal.
Yeah, that was a fleecing. An absolute fleecing.
And it continues to pay off dividends, right?
Yeah.
Like every time you see Barzal and Bevilier, just think Griffin Reinhardt trade. Griffin Reinhardt, 16-33.
We're speaking to Jeff Merrick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
And oddly enough, was it the Bruins that could have drafted Barzal? Or should have?
That's oh, right. Yeah. They could have had Shabbat. They could have had Besser. They could have, you know. Instead of Shabbat, they ended up going with his inferior defense partner in St. John instead. So listen, everybody whiffs at the draft every now and then.
Just not three times in a row.
But three in a row, man.
Three in a row stuff. Okay, so we know the Islanders are in. We know the Habs are in. We know the Lightning are in. There's one spot left in that Final Four, and that's going to be either Colorado or Vegas. And it's Colorado that is facing elimination tonight. How surprised are you at the turn that this series has taken?
It's interesting. At the end of game two, I got a text from someone in the organization. This is after Colorado went up 2-0.
Right.
And the text was simple. We got this. We're going to win the series. And I kind of, you know, looked at it and went, what? Really? Like, you just went down.
Sorry,
That was someone from Vegas. Okay. We got this. We are winning this series. And I sort of, you know, sent back a respectful, you know, that's the right attitude to have kind of text. But inside, I'm like, man, someone's eating space cake tonight. Okay, good luck in the next game. But Vegas, I kind of get the feeling that during the regular season, because I had talked to some people in Vegas about this, that around trade deadline time, I said, you know, how frisky are you guys going to be? And what came back was, we're not sure if we can beat Colorado. We better do something. Like, I wonder how much Colorado was in their heads all season long. Mm-hmm. If they were sort of, you know, class of the NHL. And you all know about the top line and Cale Makar, and Grubauer had himself a dynamite season, etc. I did wonder how much that got in the heads of the Vegas Golden Knights. But I think the key to all of this was periods 2 and 3 of game two. Game one was a wash. I mean, Vegas was on fumes. Mm. Periods 2 and 3 where Vegas really skated with, and I would make the argument skated over, the Colorado Avalanche, I think that's when they realize, you know what? We can beat this team. Sure, they're going to win this game, but we can beat this team. To me, the story of this series is Vegas grabs the Colorado Avalanche by the leg at the opening faceoff and drags them into deep water.
Yeah.
And says, we're going to tread water out here. Let's see how long you can keep up with us. Like, when you watch these games, don't you see, like, okay, man, Colorado's keeping up with Vegas, keeping up with Vegas, keeping up with Vegas, keeping up with
Starting to slow down.
Doesn't it feel, right? Yeah, and Vegas just stays there.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. They set a pace that's incredibly high, and they stay there. And the interesting thing about that is the last game, they did it at altitude.
Yeah.
Which is where Colorado should shine. I mean, ask any athlete, you know, what it's like in the third period playing against a Colorado Avalanche when you're not used to that altitude. And guys will tell you, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's real tough. Vegas, like their conditioning, their precision, I think they're really well coached. Vegas is real doing it here. Like, this is some pretty impressive stuff from the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, all indications are this is going to be the Vegas Golden Knights beating the Colorado Avalanche. I just have a hard time counting out the Avs, but I will say this. You could make the argument. Elliot and I talked about this on the podcast last week. You could make the argument that the MVP of this series is...
You tell me.
The Department of Player Safety for the Kadri suspension.
Independent arbitrator who's upheld the suspension.
Yeah, that would make a big difference in this series, like, without question.
If Colorado goes out, and I won't say that it's as big as the Shifley loss to Winnipeg, but if Colorado goes out tonight, that's two series that end, I would say, unexpectedly. Mm. And you've got key players suspended on each side. Like, that says a lot. And I can't remember kind of two suspensions in the same postseason that would have the same effect.
Mm-hmm. There's a really, you know, for all those people that thought that by the end of the season, players would be exhausted both physically and mentally, and a lot of guys would check out and not really be in, just because of what you go through. I mean, the bubble is one thing, and then a whole season like this, and then the playoffs is quite another. For anyone who thought that we'd see a lot of players and teams check out, and listen, we saw this towards the end of the regular season for teams that were already out, but I don't see any teams booking tee times while the playoffs are on. And we do see that sometimes, right? You guys have seen it. Like, you felt it when, okay, this team is checked out.
Arizona in the bubble last year.
They're booking flights, right?
Yeah, hey, when's your team? We want out of here. Like, yeah.
St. Louis versus the Canucks.
Get me out of here.
We already won the cup. It was way better with fans. See ya.
See you later. Check me out on Facebook. I'm out of here. Yep. It's we're not seeing that, and we're seeing a sort of really burning intensity and a real bit of, you know, should we say the return of some nasty hockey? And I don't know whether that's just guys are more intense, and, you know, in the North Division specifically, they see and you know, that's with the Shifley situation, you see an easier path to the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
And so maybe it makes that more, there's an intensity that burns with. But for whatever reason, we're seeing some nasty stuff this year.
Absolutely.
I don't know whether nerves are close to the skin, players are annoyed, I don't know what it is. I have no idea. But this is some nasty hockey. I'm not saying it's bad for the NHL. I know they don't like seeing stretchers. Nobody does. I know they don't like seeing injuries. Nobody does. But I think this is reminding everybody how dangerous a sport this is. As much as we marvel at, you know, Tampa firing the biscuit around during their power play, this is still a dangerous game. And I think this year's playoffs has reminded a lot of people.
And in the context of Vegas and Colorado, it's intense and it's nasty. It's also played at 1,000 miles an hour. Right. And that usually leads to, you know, spectacular collisions or what have you. But I wanted to ask you real quick before I let you go on that series. Yep. We've talked about coaching so much. I remember when DeBoer essentially threw away game one. I mean, that was, I know it wasn't exactly that way, but you start Lehner, you kind of acknowledge that you're not going to have your legs in this game. And I thought that was a very brazen move from a head coach to just throw away a game. But it also spoke to a confidence level that I didn't realize was so strong. And on the other side of the coaching thing, when you talked about, you got that text saying that, you know, Vegas felt fine and that one employee being down 2-0. I thought it was interesting that Jared Bednar, after the first game that his team lost in the playoffs, which was made the series 2-1, he got so aggressive in attacking Stars. I remember looking at the quotes and saying, Jared, you know, you guys are 6-1 in the playoffs. You steamrolled everybody. Maybe don't get so uptight after one loss, but maybe he saw what the guy that texted you saw, that this thing was slipping away before the Golden Knights actually won a game.
There must have been something. I'm with you 100%. But Bednar must have seen something. And what's the old saying? You never critique a win. You can't really go after the guys as they're, you know, dusting the St. Louis Blues, winning the first game. And by the way, you very quietly in these playoffs, one of the most impressive performances that I saw was Robin Leonard in that first game, because he knew he had to eat that.
Yep.
There was no way Marc-Andre Fleury was coming in, and Leonard was like, this is me taking one for the team. It's like the equivalent of blocking a shot. Right. I'm out here to block shots because I know there's no way that Marc-Andre Fleury is coming in. To the part about coaching, I had a text exchange. This is Tuesday, 6:33 a.m. I'm having a text exchange with a coach, and he sends me this question. We were texting about the Colorado-Vegas, and I'll read you the question.
Okay.
He says, do you want to be the best entry team or the best recovery team? And he says, I think that's what you're seeing in the Vegas-Colorado series here. Vegas turned up their recovery game. Hmm. Puck races, playing fast through a plan and pucks deep. Colorado is playing an entry game. And he went on to talk about, I wonder at what point, if at all, Bednar changes tactics.
That's really interesting.
Because it's not working.
That's really interesting.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
So just a sidebar to watch. Do you want to be the best entry team or the best recovery team? Because Vegas is playing recovery, and it's working to a T.
Jeff, you're the best, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight and all the action this weekend, and we'll do this again next week.
7 days, gentlemen. Enjoy it.